सहनाक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीअद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवासवि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So we're in chapter, page 14, the Bhaktivedanta Purport to Srimad Bhagavatam, 420, at the bottom. We're in this purport. The living entities who are many and who are entangled in this material world are not pure. You found it? However, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pure and detached. Due to being covered by the material body, the living entities are not self-effulgent, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramatma, is self-effulgent. The living entities, being contaminated by the modes of material nature, are called Saguna, whereas Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is Nirguna, not being under the influence of the material modes. So here, however, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pure and detached. So, if we want to have a relationship with someone, there should be a common point, a common ground for this relationship. So here, Prabhupada says, Krishna is pure and detached. So in Bhagavad Gita, in 14th chapter, Arjuna asks a question, how do I transcend the modes and how I can be established on a transcendental platform? So Krishna answers in a famous verse, Mamcha yo vyabhicharana bhakti ugena sevate sagunan samatiti tam brahma bhuya kalpate. If the soul engages in devotional service without falling in any circumstance, then he will be established on a brahma bhuta platform, the spiritual platform, where actually the real devotional service starts, on the spiritual platform. And in the purport, Prabhupada explains, you cannot be the servant of the king if you don't have the proper qualification. And if you want to associate with Brahman, the Supreme Brahman, then you have to be Brahman yourself. The soul is already Brahman, but he doesn't act on this capacity. He doesn't realize. He's not realized Brahman. In the same way, here, Krishna is pure and detached. So the soul should be also pure and detached if the soul wants to associate with him. And we become pure by following our duties, and we are detached by not being desirous for the result of our activities. This is also Krishna's mood. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says about himself, Namam karmani limpanti, name karma palespriha. There is no work that affects me, my work doesn't affect me, so he's pure. And name karma palespriha, I am not attached to the fruits, so Krishna is also detached. Pure and detached. And Krishna is working because of the benefit for his devotees. Yes.
The conception of Saguna and Nirguna are the only proper conclusion of those mantras, 4 and 5 especially.
Which mantras?
Those
4 and 5?
Yeah.
No. There are many other things.
But to understand the Lord is like the only proper understanding one can derive from hearing about his such contradictory qualities.
This one angle. Another thing is that he cannot be understood just by mundane thought speculation, because his characteristics are baffling for the mind of the materialist. This saguna and nirguna is taken from the purport of Prabhupada, therefore we're stressing it so much, because in the purport Prabhupada says the words saguna and nirguna in this context are very important. Therefore we're stressing on this, but it's not the only conclusion. But you can say it's the only conclusion in the sense that it's based on this, it follows the principle of Vishavasi. Is that okay?
How does it relate to Vishavasi perception?
Sagun and Irgun. Well, wow. What do you think? How do you relate?
This establishes the position of Isha.
Yes. In which way? That he's...
We need to upgrade ourselves to this level to actually perform Isha Vasana. And then detached, as you said.
Yes. And also, he's full of transcendental qualities, that means he's the supreme enjoyer. He's the controller. It's not us. And if he is full of qualities, then transcendental qualities which are very beautiful, then it is easy for us to accept our subordinate position. It is very natural, because everybody wants to follow someone who is perfect and attractive. It is not superficial and it is not unnatural. Because otherwise it might sound a little scary for the soul. You have to surrender to God. You have to obey God, who is... what is this in the Bible? I am God. What was that? Jealous God.
Thou shalt not have any gods.
Yeah. Otherwise, send you to hell forever. Stuff like this. So it might sound scary. So all this sagun and nirgun, this shows that Krishna is full of transcendental qualities, and the soul is naturally attracted to these qualities.
Also, one can derive from this the meaning that Krishna is in possession of all the qualities.
In possession.
So he possesses all the qualities. So whatever I do is just like. He is actually the possessor of this
quality. Yeah. The ultimate perfection of every quality of the soul is found in Krishna also. And the Brahma Jyoti is just the effulgent of his qualities, because when we look at the sky, then we see the stars. The stars actually shine with the qualities of the pious persons who live there. Krishna, being the most pious person, his personal effulgence is called Brahma Jyoti. So this is just the effulgence of his qualities. Something like this. Yes.
When people on other planets see Earth, does it also have a shine?
I'm sure when Krishna was on the planet Earth, then it was shining. And as long as they're pious persons, should be. But I don't cannot tell a first-hand experience. Yes.
So, because the sun is the most bright, the brightest planet we can see, does that mean that there are the most pious people there?
Sorry?
The sun is the brightest planet that we see shining. So, does that mean that there are more pious people on that planet than other places?
Not necessarily, because the sun is just it shines. It's just the medium by. For the light supplied in this universe.
Okay.
So it's something different. And also you can take it that because the sun god worships a special form of Krishna, of Vishnu there, Surya Narayan, who is actually the sun god takes his effulgence from this source. So in a sense it is just a transmission by for the light coming from the Krishna's body. which is the way it comes here in the dictionary.
Okay.
In this sense.
The
moon
has half shining, half
never
shining.
You mean half? It is it's a heavenly planet, that much I know. Well, this and also Raho and Keto, they also attack it sometimes.
It's taking a ground, it's a specific ray of the sun has thousands of rays. Mm. And there's a specific ray from the sun that nourishes the moon planet.
Okay.
And during the bright fortnight, it fills the moon planet with nectar. And then during the dark fortnight, the pit trees drink that.
So it's the sun is the origin.
The sun is nourished. And as it has one specific ray for each of the planets, yeah, nourishing them, and another ray that nourishes the stars. Mm-hmm. So many rays that go towards. It's not just the impersonal thing that uses the same rays everywhere. It's,
yeah,
a specific ray. Some rays are healing, some are cooling.
Very nice. So actually this that we know about the moon, that it nourishes the vegetables, it also comes from the sun, actually. The sun is the original source, and then it just transmits through the moon. Okay. Thank you. So, Krishna is working for the benefit of his devotees. He is detached from the result of his activities, and therefore he is driving the chariot of Arjuna just to benefit him, not because he wants to get something out of the whole battlefield. He doesn't have anything to gain. He says this several times, several places. There is no work that binds him, and he's not obliged, but he's working to follow example and to benefit his devotees. And he's looking for, like Rupa Goswami says, the devotee should associate with like-minded persons. Krishna also is looking for such like-minded souls who are pure and detached. And he wants to have relationship, close relationship with them. Of course, Krishna has a relationship with everybody, but this is from his side. From the side of the souls, it is not necessary that the soul acknowledges or realizes this relationship. So Krishna wants to re-establish this interaction. And he's looking for such souls who are who made already this important switch in the consciousness, that I'm working for someone else's benefit, not for my benefit. And on this basis, the soul can actually start working for Krishna's pleasure. This is what is attractive for Krishna. And this is the spiritual world we see in Goloka Vrindavan. Everybody is actually acting for Krishna's pleasure. Therefore, the acharyas, some acharyas, they call this place Goloka Vrindavan, the land of the gurus, because everybody is guru there for us. Because everybody is working for Krishna's benefit, not for his own. Okay. So we'll continue. The middle of the page, 15. The Lord is the master of all inconceivable potencies. For him there is no difference between the material and the spiritual energy, because he is the source of both. He can turn the material energy to spiritual. Thus he appears in the form of Archa Vigraha to accept the service of his devotees. This Archa Vigraha is eternally existent with all paraphernalia, and it's both Saguna, possessing transcendental qualities, and Nirguna, free of material contaminations. So we always say for Krishna there is no difference for his energies. But why it is so? Because he can accomplish different purposes with different energies. There is no need to switch energies. He can do anything what he likes with any of his energies. Therefore there is no difference for him. And this is the reason why the archa form, the deity form, it appears material, but actually it's spiritual, because there is no difference for Krishna. He can appear in spiritual form, but we won't be able to perceive him. Also. Since the Lord is the master of all energies and the supreme enjoyer, the living beings should act according to his desire and not independently. In the purport to Mantra 4, Srila Prabhupada writes,
every part and parcel is a complete whole, and endowed with some particular energy to act according to the Lord's will. When the part and parcel living entity forgets his particular activities under the Lord's will, he is considered to be in Maya, illusion. Thus, from the very beginning, Sri Shupanishad warns us to be very careful to play the part designated for us by the Lord. This does not mean that the individual soul has no initiative of his own. Because he is part and parcel of the Lord, he must partake of the initiative of the Lord as well. When a person properly utilizes his initiative or active nature with intelligence, understanding that everything is the Lord's potency, he can revive his original consciousness, which was lost due to the association with Maya, the external energy.
In other words, this Ishvasya concept doesn't mean that the soul is just like a robot without his personal will or desires. It just means that they should be in line with Krishna's will. And this is what the acharyas mean when they say that there is oneness. It's oneness in desire, not oneness in a sense that there is just one soul, only Brahman. Bhagavad Gita provides an example of improper usage of one's initiative. In the beginning of the Gita, Arjuna refuses to take part of the dynamic devotional service and instead chooses a passive life of frustration. In a purport to Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada writes that in this way, Arjuna intended to use Krishna consciousness as an excuse to not carry out his prescribed duties of fighting. This is common, sometimes you can see it. Shastra is misused as an excuse for being lazy. Because we're spiritual, we don't have to work, and we can be also very negligent. We shouldn't perform our duties with care, because we are spiritual, we don't care anymore about all these material things. The problem with this is that to be able to be, if you want to be successful materially or spiritually, you have to apply the same principles. That means you have to have determination and focus, and then you'll get only result. It doesn't matter which field you apply. Another aspect of Arjuna's rejection to be an active servant of the Lord is shown in Bhagavad Gita, where he suggests that if Krishna wants the death of Bhishma and Drona, he should kill them himself. In other words, Arjuna prefers to remain inactive while the Lord is engaged in work which will ultimately bring enjoyable results for Arjuna. In a purport to this group of verses, Srila Prabhupada writes, Arjuna has addressed Lord Krishna as Govinda because Krishna is the object of all pleasures for cause and senses. By using this significant word, Arjuna indicates that Krishna should understand what will satisfy Arjuna's senses. But Govinda is not meant for satisfying our senses. If we try to satisfy the senses of Govinda, however, then automatically our own senses are satisfied. Materially, everyone wants to satisfy his senses, and he wants God to be the order supplier for such satisfaction. So we have here the field of action, and if we develop an interest in this field, then we'll have develop also need. And this is what Prabhupada means here by saying initiative in the previous purport. So you have desire, and if you contemplate this desire, it will turn to a need, then you have to act. You cannot just ignore it. Krishna also has an idea how the field should be operated. And his idea is perfect. Ours is not necessarily. So the only thing is we have to choose to make a choice whether our initiative will be in line with Krishna's or not. This is the Ishavasya concept. So if we decide to use it independently from Krishna, then we might get away from the Bhagavan aspect. We won't develop relationship with Bhagavan, but we still will be still in relationship and dependent from Paramatma and Bhagavan. From this we cannot just get away. It's not possible. We'll have to accept at least this. We are under the control of Paramatma, and we have to work with something, which is Brahman, material energy. So how do we understand Krishna's plan? Because sometimes we hear, only if I am face to face with Krishna and Krishna tells me personally, then only I know what is his plan about me. Arjuna had the good luck. Krishna was guiding him personally, but Krishna is not here personally, so I don't know what is Krishna's plan for me. But we see here, Krishna and Arjuna were together, Krishna was talking, but Arjuna, it didn't work for Arjuna in the beginning. He didn't accept Krishna's plan for him. So also we see when Krishna was present, there are so many people, they saw him, but how many actually understood what is his position? And even among those who understood that he is the Supreme Brahman, how many actually did follow his plan? Because we know, for example, Dhritarashtra, he knew that Krishna is God, but he still didn't follow. Duryodhana had some doubts. In Mahabharata is described how one evening before he went to bed, something happened during the day that made him doubtful. Maybe this Krishna is actually the Supreme Brahman. So before he went to bed, just in a case that this is true, he offered the obeisance to Krishna just to make sure that if this is true, that at least I did something to please him, and then he went to bed. So, but still, he didn't follow Krishna's plan. So it is not just by seeing Krishna. It is not necessary that this means that one should follow. One will follow his plan, his initiative. And how do we know actually Krishna's plan? It's by hearing from authority, from Shastra and from the Guru. Yes. Yes, in this sense he followed Krishna's plan in this sense, but he didn't cooperate with his devotees. He was envious to the Pandavas, and Krishna doesn't like when someone is envious with his devotees. Krishna says in Mahabharata, if someone is envious to the Pandavas, that means he's envious to me. So in this sense, he didn't follow Krishna's plan that one should worship his devotees and serve him.
What if he would, then, Krishna's plan?
Yeah, you have to be able to work with these two things simultaneously. In one sense, he was following, in another sense, he was not. Krishna wanted to kill all these demoniac kings. So someone had to play the role of Dhritarashtra. But it depends on the free will of the jiva if he will place himself in this position. So if you don't want to play this role, you won't. But apparently Dhritarashtra wanted, because he was attached, etc., etc. So he played. So we understand Krishna's plan by following the authority, and that means rejecting Shastra follows that we reject Krishna's plan. Krishna's initiative. When we use our initiative properly, that means we follow the Ishavasya concept from the first mantras. Then we have we accept, as Maharaj was talking this morning, Chitta, Chitta, Nishwar. We have to be able to see all these elements. So we have to be able to see Krishna, then the living entity, and the material energy. So if you just follow God and His plan, then we have our philosophy. But when we include the other living beings and the material energy, then we have the culture, how we deal with everything, and the etiquette. And we, if we just accept Krishna and we don't care about the living entities, then in Bhagavatam this is shown as an example of devotional service in the mode of ignorance. You just see the deity and you don't see how Krishna is present in the hearts of the other devotees. So it's not very appreciated, although it's nice. It's good, but it's not the best. So our initiative should be based on the Ishavasi concept. Mantra 6 to 8, the Mahabhagavata's vision. So we, if you notice, now we'll have Mahabhagavata's vision, and then we'll have the next group of verses from 9 to 14. They describe the atheists, the non-devotees. Again, the same principle from the beginning. We have the principle of Ishavasya and then we have the application. The second and third mantra show how do you apply it, what happens, and then third mantra explains what happens if you don't apply it. Then we have two verses which describe the characteristics of the Lord, and then Ishupanishad comes back again to the same application of the Ishavasya. Now, mantra 6 to 8, they explain in more details the result of following Ishavasya, how Mahabhagavata, who follows this principle, applies it perfectly, what results result he achieves. And then 9 to 14, they explain what happens when you don't follow. Again, the same schedule. Mantra 6. Mantra 6 describes the characteristics of the perfect devotee. The Mahabhagavata is in perfect Ishavasya consciousness. He sees everything in connection to the Lord. Sees all living beings as his parts and parcels. He sees him within everything. Such kind of spiritual vision is possible only for the advanced transcendentalists, and is achieved by following the disciplic succession. Cannot be imitated by mundane people. Srila Prabhupada stresses on the word anupashyati, which means that one should follow the previous acharyas rather than rely on his material vision. His divine grace explains the difference between three levels of devotees, Kanishta, Madhyama and Uttam. The Kanishta devotees go to the temple, church or mosque, but they think that the Lord is present only there. The Kanishtas cannot properly estimate the spiritual advancement of other devotees. They follow mechanically different rituals and sometimes quarrel among themselves, considering one type of devotion better than another. The Madhyama devotee can discriminate between four classes and interact with them accordingly. The Mahabhagavata devotee does not discriminate between different material categories, but sees everyone as part and parcel of God. He tries to do good for all, regardless of their present position and activities. Shastra Chakshus means to see properly things. And we see here the criteria for advancement in Krishna consciousness in this mantra. And in the purport, the criteria is how much you can see Krishna everywhere. The Kanishtas, they see Krishna only in the temple, or in the mosque, or in the the church. But they have difficulties to see him outside. That means they cannot connect everything to him. they will be directly engaged in some type of service only when they are inside the temple. And when they go out, they have their life, their practical life, and they are practical. They're being practical. And they think that the laws, the spiritual laws, they apply only in the temple. Outside of the temple, we have different set of rules, which are practical, made by man. And they cannot make this connection between the scriptures and the practical life. Then the Madhyamas, and also the Kanishthas, they work on the platform of the mind very often. And if they are attached to certain types of devotional activities, that means everybody should be attached to this. If they like book distribution, that means everybody should be into book distribution. You know this? It happens. It happened in my country before. If you don't distribute books, you're a demon, or at least you're not advanced. Or if you don't like pujari services, that means you're not advancing or whatever. The Madhyama devotees, they can see that actually Krishna is enjoying all these services, and he can appreciate the contribution of every devotee. Every type of service is good for him. It's not that one service is good and other service is maya, because Krishna enjoys all types of services. And also, the Madhyama devotee, he can take the God out of the temple, in a sense, and apply and see him in his own lifestyle, in his practical activities. This is the difference between the two. And he also discriminates between certain types of persons, and he's choosing very carefully his association. He won't associate with everybody, the Madhyama. He will try to associate with the advanced devotees to serve them. He will make friends with the those who are on the same level, and he will give mercy to the neophytes. Well, not to the neophytes, actually. Technically, it's to the innocent, those who are not devotees yet. And he will avoid the association of the envious. But Uttama devotee, he doesn't see this, he doesn't discriminate, and he gives mercy to everybody. Because he sees somehow or other everybody is connected to Krishna. And everybody's a devotee. Yes.
Is the Madhyama avoid the envious because he doesn't want to fall down?
Doesn't want to?
Fall down.
Fall down. More because he doesn't see, he cannot help them actually. He doesn't see how he can because if you preach to envious people, then they commit offenses, and this is not good for them, and it's not good for you also. If you listen this offensive speech, it's not good for the Madhya preacher also. So it's more that he's benefiting them by not associating with them, because at least they don't commit offenses. But I guess also this is also not good for him, because he's wasting his time. He cannot actually help them, and he has to work in this hostile environment. So I guess also he's concerned about his own purity. He wants to maintain his high standard of consciousness. Yes.
When a Madhyama devotee is dealing with another devotee who is envious of him particularly, what is his position?
Then he has to respect this devotee from a distance. And if he doesn't have problem with that, he's envious. If the problem is only with this devotee, he can continue dealing with him, but he should be careful not to provoke him in any way. But generally, with the envious with this, Rupa Goswami calls them devotee with bad character. They should be avoided. And one should offer respect from a distance. They should be respected, but not, you shouldn't associate with them closely. They are still devotees though. Mantra 7. By following bona fide authority, anupashiti, one realizes one of the aspects of the Ishavasi principle, that all living beings are parts and parcels of the Lord. Thus he is freed of illusion. Anupashiti means, again, Shastra Chakshus, to see according to the previous authorities and according to Shastra. That means to see Krishna everywhere. To see how and appreciate how the potencies of the Lord are working, and how to see the creation of the Lord. This will be Brahman. Then you see how he is present in all the living entities, and he is actually facilitating their enjoyment in this material world according to their desires, and he is controlling everything. This will be Paramatma. And then you can see also how he is doing everything. Krishna is doing everything just to re-establish the relationship between himself and all these souls. And this will mean you see the Bhagavan aspect. So Shastra Chakshu or Anupashyati means you are able to see at least one of these aspects, and you work progressively up. So this is gained by serving the Guru, by asking questions. So the questions should be, first you have to find the Guru, then you have to ask questions with submissive attitude, and then once the question is asked, then it should be you should apply the answer in life. That means service, actually. So pariprashnena and sevai. Yes.
Is it possible to have Paramatma or Bhagavan realization without Brahman realization?
Well, Paramatma and Bhagavan.
Yeah.
Bhagavan includes all three.
Includes.
So if you have Bhagavan realization, that means automatically you understand everything about the.
Okay.
It's like if you have 1,000 rupees, that means you have 10 already. Okay. It's included. The spiritual position of the living being is perceived only by the Madhyama and Uttama Adhikari devotees. The Mahabhagavata devotee sees oneness in a sense that he sees everything as the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is oneness between the living beings and the Lord because they have identical interests. The living beings can be happy only in connection with the Lord, and the Lord, although independent, derives pleasure from the devotional activities and of the individual souls. So oneness means, it doesn't mean that there is no difference between Krishna and the living entity. It means common interests and common goal. There is common point. So when the Acharyas, they define their systems of philosophy as oneness, like we have Ramanujacharya, his philosophy is called Vishishta Advaita, so it's still Advaita, it's oneness. Or Vishnu Swami, Shuddha Advaita. It's not Advaita in this monistic sense. There is no difference between the Jiva and the Lord. It means actually common interest. And this common interest is the devotee wants to serve Krishna, and Krishna wants to reciprocate with his devotee. This is the common interest. And they both derive pleasure from this. Okay. The word ekatvam anupashyataha indicates that one should understand the unity of all souls from the viewpoint of the revealed scriptures. The unity of interest between the living entities exists because they belong to the same big family. The modern attempts to bring harmony in society are based on speculative theories and lead only to misery and despair.
A godless civilization arises from illusion, and the result of such a civilization is lamentation. A godless civilization, such as that sponsored by the modern politicians, is always full of anxieties because it may be crushed at any moment.
Thank you. So unless it is based on the real authoritative science, the civilization cannot work properly. And we see this practically. If you go to the West, this is what we see. The word Ekatvam in this mantra does not establish an absolute identity between the individual soul and the Supreme Lord. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada explains. To use another example, the quantity of salt present in a drop is never comparable to the quantity of the salt present in the complete ocean. But the salt present in the drop is qualitatively equal in chemical composition to all the salt present in the ocean. If the individual living being were equal to the Supreme Lord, both qualitatively and quantitatively, there would be no question of his being under the influence of the material energy. In the previous mantras, it has already been discussed that no living being, not even the powerful demigods, can surpass the Supreme Being in any respect. Therefore, Ekatvam does not mean that a living being is equal in all respect to the Supreme Lord. The next mantra tells us more about the characteristics of the Supreme Person. So the next mantra explains how someone who has developed this Ishvasya consciousness, how he sees the Lord. Because he's showing compassion to everybody in a way that they might necessarily appreciate it so much. Like, for example, Shukadeva Goswami was walking, and all these kids and women that were around him, kids were joking with him and goofing at him, and then women also. So he was showing mercy to them. He would not, okay, I'm the laughing stock of these people, so their need is to have something to make fun. So I'm the object, so I don't mind. He's showing mercy to them also. But it's not that they take advantage of this spiritually. But when he came to the spot where Maharaja Parikshit was, then he started preaching. And then everybody could actually listen and take advantage. So, something like this. Is that okay? Okay. End up here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama.